The financial world awaits Bernanke.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Doug Krisner. Today, Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke faces a crucial test of his ability to manage the credit crunch. He'll give a speech in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, of all places, and some are calling it the most important speech of his career. Amy Scott reports.
Every year, central bankers and leading economists descend on resort town Jackson Hole in late summer.
They do some hiking, they do some whitewater rafting. But Jackson Hole has become, over the years, a central venue.
That's Adam Larick. He teaches economics at Carnegie Mellon. This year, he says investors will be watching for any sign that the Fed might cut interest rates to relieve the recent credit crunch. James Paulson is chief investment strategist with Wells Capital Management. He says if the market knows ahead of time that the Fed is going to cut interest rates, it barely budges when the news breaks. That's why he doesn't expect Ben Bernanke to tip the Fed's hand in today's speech.
If it does make a move, it wants to change people's thoughts and culture. One of the ways you can do that is with shock treatment.
Plenty of Wall Street players would love an interest rate cut because cheaper borrowing costs help boost stock prices. But the cautious point out that cheap, easy money is what got us into this whole credit mess in the first place. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Yesterday, the Dow lost 50 to 13,238. The S&P slipped 6 points to 1457, but strength among the tech stocks helped the Nasdaq higher by 2 points to 2565. Overnight in Asia, the markets were each up by more than 2%, and in Europe, the major markets are moving higher at this hour. Have you taken a flight this summer? You'll know that air travel's been a nightmare. Record delays, missed connections, lost luggage. And if you're flying this holiday weekend, brace yourselves. The number of passengers is expected to be up 3% from last year. Experts agree the best way to solve the problem is to rebuild the nation's air traffic control infrastructure. The government's planning to spend $15 billion over the next 2 decades to do just that. The contract for the first phase was awarded yesterday to ITT. Let's bring in Business Week reporter Chris Palmieri. He's helped to write their cover story on fear and loathing at the airport. Chris, what is the condition of the control system right now?
The biggest problem is just this very, very antiquated system of technology where flight controllers are squawking on radios and pilots are depending on radar, which, you know, anybody that's got a GPS system in their car now understands that satellites should play a much bigger role.
Do they have incentive to move quickly to create a new system?
The manufacturers absolutely have incentive. The airlines say, well, we're waiting for the FAA. There's just, it's so complex and there's so many people involved. It is just very difficult to get everybody to agree on what the system's going to look like and who's going to pay for what.
What are the downsides here in terms of how much negative impact this could have on passengers and on the economy?
Well, right now, you know, we're just ending what some people have called the summer of hell, just, you know, record delays. I think a big part of the problem is that the airlines schedule too many flights at peak hours, but in reality, you know, runway space is short, and there's only so many planes that can take off.
Give me some of the highlights as we look back on the summer of hell.
Well, we've had people on the ground for hours. We had a flight from Caracas, you may remember, where the passengers were banging on the overhead compartments and everyone had to be taken off the flight and gone through security for questioning. Nationally, a third of all flights are late and by as much as 50 minutes. It's really unacceptable.
Chris Palmieri is Business Week reporter here in Los Angeles. Hey, Chris, thanks so much for talking to us.
Thank you very much. Fly safe.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by the Medtronic Foundation, sponsoring The Mysterious Human Heart, a PBS series exploring diagnosis, treatment, and prevention of heart disease through science and technology, premiering on PBS in October.
As the anniversary of Hurricane Katrina fades from the headlines, the federal money for recovery remains tied up in red tape and bureaucracy, all $130 billion. Reconstruction has been heavily financed by private funds. Donations from schools, religious congregations, foundations, and businesses have set philanthropic records. And as John Dimsdale reports, celebrities are still coming to the rescue.
The rich musical traditions of Bayou Country have helped drum up public contributions for the Gulf's recovery. Fundraising concerts have featured musicians with local roots, such as Branford Marsalis and Harry Connick Jr.
My first priority is to tell people all over the world how dear this city is. Don't forget it. Come and help us out.
The list of celebrities that have gone to the Gulf Coast and given large donations includes Oprah Winfrey, Brad Pitt, and George Clooney. Nobody has added up celebrity contributions, but the director of the Urban Institute's Center on Nonprofits and Philanthropy, Elizabeth Boris, says they've been especially important after Katrina.
They're so visible, and they put the seal of approval. You know, we're giving, we're touched, we're concerned, and here's one way to do it. They create a culture, especially among the young people, that says, you know, it's okay to give. And I think the juxtaposition of pop culture and internet culture made a huge difference for the Hurricane Katrina efforts.
The Giving USA Foundation reports total donations for disaster relief hit a record $7 billion in the year following the 2005 hurricanes. That dwindled to barely $1 billion in the second year. Among the largest single fundraisers was the Bush-Clinton Katrina Fund. The well-heeled friends of former Presidents George Bush Sr. and Bill Clinton chipped in $130 million. But that fund has closed up shop and will soon grant its last dollar. Stacey Palmer, the editor of the Chronicle of Philanthropy, says celebrity attention is needed now more than ever.
This is a particularly important time, perhaps more important than it was right after Katrina, because right after it happened, I think everybody, regardless of whether there was a celebrity involved, felt a need to give because we saw all of those pictures of people suffering and knew how bad it was. But now's the time when a celebrity could really help.
Former President Bill Clinton will contribute some more fundraising star power next week when he begins a national tour for his new book about philanthropy and civic action. His first stop, Oprah Winfrey's TV show. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
And you can get the Morning Report podcast at our website. It's free at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Doug Krisner. Thanks for listening.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.